Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Cancer has the power to transform the lives of those who are struck by it and of the people around them. That truism is explored in a new novel by Burlington writer David Huddle. The Fox Chronicle focuses on the matriarch of a large family, I mean very large, more than 24 kids, and it explores how the family's relationships are tested by her cancer. But cancer has an unexpected side effect on Karen Fox. It makes her seem unusually beautiful. For her insular, plain-looking family, this sudden beautification feels like a betrayal. VPR's Peter Biello spoke with author David Huddle about the Fox Chronicle.
So, pop quiz, can you name all of these children?
I certainly cannot. I could name a few of them. There are 28 of them, but I know that really only because the proofreader of the galleys made a list of them and their ages and numbered them. And when I saw the number she came up with, it was 28, and I think that's accurate.
Mm-hmm. And not one of these kids takes center stage necessarily. They all sort of exist, and they come almost like superheroes in a way, each of them having their own special talent. Like, I think it was Robert, for example, who was like the family music historian.
Yes, he knows all that stuff. Exactly. And there's one of them, there's an Isabel who's very good at kind of coaching her mother through difficulties. And she's pretty young. I think she's not much more than 10 or so, but they know that she's the right one to go and talk privately with their mother.
And these children talk with their mother quite a bit during this illness, I think, as a way of coping with it and coping with the changes that are going on with the mother, who you write in the first line of your book, she's becoming pretty, and we are a sort of a simple-looking, homely family.
A homely family.
So give us some perspective on this family. Like, why do they see it as such a betrayal?
I have had a number of friends and family who've died in the past few years, and I actually have seen one of my good friends who, as a result of chemo, became quite an appealing person. I'm not sure that I would call her beautiful or pretty, but somehow the chemo affected her in a way that made her much more appealing, which was startling and a little bit disturbing. So I think that that's where it came from.
What do you think it is about this super large family that can tell us something about death and about one person among this group of people who love each other dying?
My mother-in-law died 2 or 3 years ago, and she'd been in the hospital for 40 days, and then finally they sent her home to die. And so my family and my wife's sister's family and boyfriends and husbands, there must have been maybe 20 of us in the house in the presence of that death, and it was quite a moving experience. And some of it, my interest, I'm sure, in this topic was informed by that experience. And even though I think all of us would say that it was a very good thing that we were there in the presence of the matriarchs dying, it really set us off. It was sort of we kind of ricocheted off each other and walked around the house and did things in
ricocheting in an angry way, or
maybe I'm sure that was some of it. But it's almost as if, even though we had known this was coming, it was like an explosion, an emotional explosion that seemed to hit everybody in a different way. And there was this wonderful hospice person who was there who seemed to understand it and who sort of would come and speak to each of us and kind of put us right with it. So there was that. I also wanted as much as possible to make this an unsentimental journey so that the mother is always giving the straight arm to sentimentality. She just won't have it very much, even though it's very clear that she cares deeply about all these kids, her whole family.
You're writing about death, but you're also writing about family in a really interesting way.
Yes.
I can't say I have ever encountered a family of any size that is as intimate as this family is.
Yes.
Have we lost those days when people are so close and intimate, and they're always talking to each other and monitoring each other's feelings, not in a nosy way, but in a concerned way? Is that gone?
Let me say, first of all, that I don't know the answer to that question, but I will say that I've known some large families, and I know my own family, and no family that I know is like the Foxes. They're made up, and that I think that closeness came out of making them talk, their voices. You know, you don't really get a lot about them, or they don't do – they take no significant actions, but they talk a lot, and that has been something that has been my experience. In my current family with my daughters and my wife, we have these conversations that sometimes come close to foreign language because we have so much background that informs every simple sentence. And growing up, it was very much the case with my father and mother and my two brothers that we talked. Man, we really talked. And I don't know that that's closeness. I guess it is close. If you're talking to somebody, you're close enough to talk to them. But sometimes it was conflict and argument.
One of the driving points of tension in this book is the relationship between the mother and the oncologist, Dr. Lawson.
Yes.
Nothing ever comes out that it's sort of untoward, but there's always hints of that below the surface.
Yes.
And since you don't plan your novels, I was wondering how you managed that tension and I don't know, how did you manage that?
One sentence at a time, really.
Yeah.
I did have the oncologist appears really in the first few pages and appears in this way that it's very clear that he has a kind of special feeling for the mother. And I think as I presented, it seems a special feeling that they have every right to be suspicious of. And I do believe that I had in mind that nothing would come of it. But I think the project of the book became, how was I going to manage that? What was I going to do with that since I had set it into motion? So I have them go through quite a number of episodes until it becomes evident that finally is revealed to be a pretty good person.
And this doctor really gets involved with the family. I mean, gets them tickets to a dance show and arranges for a couple of tour buses to to take the mother and the family on sort of her farewell tour.
I think he likes the big family. And I do think that there are people who really like big families. Maybe there are people who didn't come from big families and they probably wouldn't enjoy being in one, but they like being in the company of them.
There's one point in the book, late in the book, where the chapter is entirely made up of just short, unattributed quotes about the mother. And one of the quotes really struck me as very sad. Maybe it's not meant to be sad, but the quote was, one of the children says, "Not a single one of us will ever be able to fit into the real world." So do they really not live in the real world? Are they sheltered?
Yes, I guess we'd have to say they are sheltered. By being in that kind of community, family as community. But I also think you have to take them as speaking in character and in situation. So that's the kind of thing you might say, man, because I grew up in this family, I'm never going to fit in the real world. That would be a sentiment you might have when your mother's about to die. Most of them will, I expect.
It's just a feeling they have when they're in the throes of this
pre-grief. It's a way to express grief.
And I wonder what will happen to them. So often in families that have been touched by cancer, mine included, when a sort of central figure like that passes, there's some level of disintegration of the family network.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't need you to speculate on what will happen to them, but it makes, this is just my reaction as a reader. I was curious about, oh, geez, what's going to happen to these 28 folks?
Yes. Well, they do give you some clues along the way. I think there's a place where they're speaking of one of the girls, maybe it's Isabel, and they're saying, well, she's, you know, classic folk. She's got this kind of solid build and it's kind of too big forehead and her earlobes are too wide and something like that. And she'll grow up to marry somebody who will be a lot like her and they will make a family that'll be just like our family and so on. I do think that happens, that quite often say you end up replicating the family that you came from either because you really benefited from that family or in some cases because that family abused you so much that you don't know any other way than to make the same thing all over again.
David Huddle, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. I've enjoyed being here.